Welcome to I Am the Cute One, a nostalgia podcast by The Dip.
This season, we'll be covering a few of the cutest teen flicks from the 2000s.
With some of our funniest friends and fellow experts of nostalgic nonsense.
So zip up that velour sweatsuit, drown yourself in cucumber melon spray, tweeze your eyebrows until your forehead is bald, and leave an appropriately angsty away message. We'll be talking all things early aughts and breaking down the Y2K of it all.
And of course, we'll never stop asking, who is the cute one? I am!
Hi, cuties. I'm Chelsea, and I am the cute one.
And I'm Donnie, and I am the cute one.
But we are joined with the true cute one. We have Lucy from Lucy on the Ground, a pop culture Instagram that tackles pretty much everything from important rom-coms to reality television and basically everything in between. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my God. Of course. I'm excited.
Well, we are covering She's the Man, and I am thrilled. I feel like we are ending this miniseries with a bang. This is the grand finale, and dare I say, like, my favorite of the three movies we've covered.
Thank goodness, because I listened to your episode with Laguna Beach today, and I was a little worried that you all were going to trash this classic.
Oh, no.
Because you all ruined Chad Michael Murray for me, and I was like, don't you dare. This is a piece of artistry, in my opinion.
It really is.
Amanda Bynes is a true treasure. I was kind of heartbroken watching this just because, like, I feel like this episode might be just, like, a straight-up love letter to her. Like, what a talent. The fact that this girl, this literal child, had her own sketch comedy show, and then for her to do this film that is meant to be cheesy, but somehow I was, like, still laughing out loud during it. I'm like, she is a comedy legend.
She is a comedic genius and the voice of a generation. And I wish her the best in wherever she is in life. But, like, when she did that Paper Magazine interview a few years ago, like, I always think Amanda will return.
Me too.
I'm so hopeful.
I'm not a big comic book person, but if there is a multiverse, like, I just want to be able to travel to the world where she's suffering silently and still thriving in entertainment just for, like, a day. And then we'll come back here where she, like, has her mental health and she's focusing on that instead of a career. But, like, just for a day, I do want to see where she, what she's
I might to. Go to the multiverse where she's not suffering at all and thriving, but,
I would just,
you know.
Stop it there.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Okay, that's also an option. Okay, yes.
But that multiverse comment, like, that will actually get, yeah, I knew my husband was going to turn around, like, fanatic. And during the pandemic, like, I had to watch all the Marvel movies, and I do enjoy them. But he probably will now listen to this episode because we've somehow tied it to a multiverse.
That's genius.
Yeah. That's how you plug it, guys. Hashtag Spider-Man, because the new Spider-Man's coming out. You'll get views that way. This is strategy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to be like, Lucy on the Ground's here, and we are talking superheroes.
Yes. Lucy, that's brilliant. I think that we should always plan ahead who we cast in the remake and just make it people who are, like, you know, in things now that people would be excited about.
Which they both crossed my mind during this. Yeah.
Lucy, we need to fully hire you as, like,
you're our
brand social media manager.
My
goodness.
But you need to dress like a man when you do it. I hope you're fine with it.
So, Donnie, before we make Lucy recap this movie in 1 minute or less, would you like to give us some background information on this fine film?
Yes, and I have some really good stuff. The people involved with making this movie basically formed my whole personality, so you'll see why in 1 second. So the movie came out in 2006, which means I didn't really have a personality in 2006, but the movie came out in 2006, and it was actually Channing Tatum's first lead role. He was one of the basketball players in Coach Carter, but, like, the first time his name was on a poster was this movie, and Amanda Bynes personally fought for him with the producers. And he still credits her to this day, saying she helped him launch his career. So that is
That's very sweet. And it also makes me feel better because, so Lucy, one thing that you should know about me is that I am a monster and I've missed out on, like, 90% of important pop culture films. So today, when I was texting Donnie as I was watching, I was saying, oh my God, is Channing Tatum low-key, like, a cutie patootie sweetheart? And I just assumed he was, like, a big old doofus because of the way he looks, because I've just maybe never seen anything else he's ever been in. That's fine. We'll move
on. Wait,
never seen anything else he's been in? Magic Mike? Step up?
But I also now feel slightly better because I'm going to jump ahead, Donnie. I'm going to let you take a breath. I have seen this movie before because I was like a Amanda Bynes super fan. But at the time, I didn't know who he was because he was new on the scene. So rewatching it, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm watching this for the first time because now he's super famous.
That makes sense. I will say I didn't have to question if you watch this movie because as soon as I found out it was about girls playing soccer, I was like, of course, Chelsea saw.
I mean, I can quote this movie. So I've seen it too much. When my husband found out I was doing this, I watched it today again. He's like, why do you need to, like, I had it on mute at times and I was like reciting it. He was like, this is unnecessary.
So a little behind the scenes stuff here. It was directed by Andy Fickman, who also directed The Game Plan, starring The Rock, and You Again, starring Kristen Bell, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Betty White. But then he focused his career randomly on Kevin James. And since these movies, he's directed Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, a Kevin James Netflix special, two seasons of Kevin Can Wait, and the Kevin James sitcom The Crew on Netflix.
Did Kevin James witness this yeah. man like hitting something with his car? Like, what has happened?
I don't know. It's certainly an odd, like, horse to bet your money on in this race.
I mean, but I wondered how Kevin was getting so many gigs. I guess this is why.
We can thank Andy, yeah.
Also, are you saying that your entire personality is Kevin James, question mark?
No, I would. You know what? I was going to find a way to edit it, but I say something every episode like this. I would blow Kevin James, but no, my personality is not shaped around him. My personality is based around the writers of this movie, who are Karen McCullough and Kristen Smith. And this duo brought us The House Bunny, Legally Blonde, Ella Enchanted, and 10 Things I Hate About You.
Wow.
So they were just, yeah, truly doing the Lord's work in the early 2000s.
You know what? I think we found a little Christmas miracle here because I have seen all of those movies. So maybe they are my personality too. So before we jump into this cinematic masterpiece, Lucy, I'm going to ask you to give a recap in 1 minute or less. Do your thing. Go.
Okay. And this was so hard. I practiced because this was so hard for me. And it's a very convoluted film. Right. We have many a plot line happening. So absolutely. It's hard. This is a movie about Viola Hastings, who loves soccer so much, and she's in high school, which is kind of a plot point I'd like to discuss later on. High school soccer player whose school has their soccer program cut unfairly because there's not enough players. So then she decides to try for the boys team. They don't let her. So then new kind of twin switch where she switches places with her brother, who's a spoiled brat, has gotten kicked out of this current school and is going to a new school that happens to be some kind of boarding school. They're rival schools, but they don't all know each other. The students are rivals and have never met or interacted except on the soccer field. And Sebastian is skipping town to go to London as a high school student to play with his band. Mm-hmm. Viola takes his spot. She has to, one, get her hairdresser friend to give her a wig and sideburns, which helps, and live with Duke Orsino, who is Channing Tatum, a very, very attractive soccer player. And she has to convince these people that she is a guy, which she's not doing a great job of, and she's acting very, very strange. They don't like her. Then she has to do another switcheroo and trick them all into thinking she's cool by sleeping with all of her friends, and they stage another cover-up. And then if it wasn't complicated enough, her mom really wants her to be a debutante, so she has to play Viola and Sebastian and switch around there, and that's how she kisses Duke in another plot point. And we all overlap at the game against the rival teams, against her ex-boyfriend, and the brother returns. They flash the student bodies. Both of them show everything. And the last 30 minutes is pretty cheesy of her trying to convince Duke that they're in love and she loves him after 2 weeks of pretending to be a boy, all because they both like cheese. So honestly, I gave maybe too much plot, but it was very confusing. That was
perfect. And what's crazy to me is this was based on a Shakespeare play. And I'm very curious to see like how. It came from.
Yeah, it was The Twelfth Night, which one I'm not familiar with. I should have Googled that. But instead, I went with the twin switcheroo theme, which you guys are carrying through your twin theme here, which is great.
Totally planned that. Definitely meant to do that. I think that your practicing paid off because that was an excellent summary. And you really did hit all of the points because this is truly a convoluted, chaotic mess. And I loved every second of it. So let's jump in.
All right.
I say let's jump in, and then of course I have a rant to go on, but I do have to address that there was this epidemic in the early aughts that normalized girls playing sports with their hair down. We had Bend It Like Beckham, we had the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, and now we have Vi, who is another girl in desperate need of a ponytail. And as the self-proclaimed sporty twin of our podcast, I just need to stand up and make my voice heard when important issues like this need to be brought to light, because justice for the ponytail and hashtag stop normalizing sweaty necks.
It doesn't make sense. And I was not sporty. And I meant to put that in my plot points, that that drives me insane when she finally takes off her wig and her sideburns. And she's like, that hair is fine too. You've been playing soccer in a wig. Like, your hair is not supposed to look that good either.
It felt good to get that off my chest.
So. I think it's for boys, probably gay boys like me, but straight ones too. I just have a thing for girls with their hair down. So, like, I didn't question it at all.
These sports teams are intense. Like, when you get to the, and I'm jumping ahead, but, like, at the end, when they're, like, coming out of this arena for a high school, like, I don't know where we're located. The face paint, that wasn't happening at my high school.
No, does face paint happen ever?
Face paint should not happen when you're playing. Like, that's just asking for pink eye. That's not hygienic. I do also love that she wants to play for the Carolina Tar Heels, which if you are not big into women's soccer, which, you know, maybe our listeners are not, but here's just a fun little tidbit. Carolina is like the best team. They are like the pipeline for the women's national team. So I love that she like plays for a high school where clearly like soccer is not even prioritized. And she's like, no, but I want to go to Carolina. It's like, cool. I want to go to the moon.
As you know, the closest I've come to sports knowledge is One Tree Hill and Little Giants. But like, I'm assuming that sports, what are they called? Scouts are not at her school to see this women's team that ends up getting cut. So like, what was her plan of attack here?
Well, what was her plan when she was dressed as a boy? Was she going to call up the scouts and be like, hey, I'm the one wearing the Justin Bieber hair? Right. Like,
but if that other school, like now that you say that, like I would think they have a pretty good girls soccer team too with the funding they've put into this arena. Just go play for the girls. Transfer with your brother. Go live in the dorms. She doesn't care about her friends or her school. Yeah. Just transfer schools.
I am sitting here gobsmacked because, yeah, it was not an all-boys school.
No.
It was a co-ed institution.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too, with that final game. We certainly jumped over everything in the middle, but we'll loop back. Yeah, they won now that Amanda Bynes is on the team, but she is not a student there. So for them to let her play that, like, the evil school could just say, like, I don't think so.
They were too busy being sexist. They weren't thinking about the fact that,
he ripped up that book.
You literally should not be playing because you're not enrolled in this program.
I mean, to be fair, I love this movie. Yeah. And I was like, they better not shit on my movie. And here I am ripping the plot apart. But like,
that just means you love it. Yeah,
it does. Like, when you watch these things back, like, what, 2006, I was maybe a sophomore in high school. So I was waiting to, like, dress in a wig and have some boy discover how amazing I was and then tell him who I was. Like, you know, Cinderella story, put me in a mask and like convince them of my personality story. Every plot point of a teen movie I wanted. Mm-hmm. So that's why I loved it. But now looking back, I am like an adult being like, where are your parents?
You're in good company here, Lucy, because both Donnie and I's love language is talking shit. So like the more we talk shit about something, the more that we love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what's happening here, is if I could love this movie more.
So the boys coach says that girls can't beat boys, and it's as simple as that. So with that, a plan is hatched because we meet the real Sebastian, who is Vi's brother, who is wearing a Violent Femmes t-shirt and has a wall full of OAR concert posters, which indicates to the casual Y2K viewer that we are dealing with an artiste here. And his band was picked to play in a music festival. So this underage boy is casually traveling to Europe for 2 weeks and will be out of school. So Vi decides to undergo a makeover, go undercover as her brother, and join the boys' soccer team because, as her friend says, inside every girl, there is a boy.
They never mention how he has money to get to Europe, does he? Like, I couldn't even take a bus to get to the mall when I was in high school.
No.
If I didn't plan it well in advance.
Maybe I just think because he's such a troublemaker and, like, we see his file. He's been kicked out of the other bougie school to go to this college, like, that has dorms. And we just don't address that fact.
And if this is your, like, punishment school, God bless you. Like, I would do bad things on purpose to go here.
Call up Kathy Hilton. Where did she send Paris? Where did she get Paris kidnapped to in the middle of the night?
Oh, God.
Too dark. So we do have to talk about this makeover. Is it believable? Would you meet Sebastian, the boy, and think, ah, yes, there's a strapping young gentleman. Definitely not Amanda Bynes in a wig.
Well, here's the thing. Here's my last piece of trivia for this. The producers wanted Jesse McCartney to play Sebastian because they say he has the same facial features as
they
Amanda.
Do.
But he was unavailable. God. And then I think it would
they
be a lot
do.
More.
They do. Possible. But also the wig of it all honestly makes me sad to think about because the quips that Amanda has, especially like the first 75%, the last gets very cheesy and she's on the soccer field and it gets, I have to mute some of it. There's some secondhand mm-hmm. embarrassment.
A lot of butt clenching.
Yes. The beginning is so, I feel like she must have improvised like some of her lines and her voices and stuff. But she's spoken out about this movie that it made her so sad and self-conscious seeing herself as a boy. And I'm like, you look like Amanda Bynes in a wig, but like, it was her breakout role, I thought. Like, she should have been nominated for more than a Teen Choice here. I don't know. I feel like that part makes me sad to think about that she hated herself in a wig. But no, I didn't believe it.
Yeah, and I've been to, like, drag shows where they had girls dress up as men as well. And, like, this was once I was out and openly gay. And, like, seeing some of them really made me question if I made the right, like, decision in coming out of the closet or not. I was like, what is happening here? But here, I feel like it just looked silly. So it does break my heart that it upset her so much that she, like, still talked about it in later interviews.
Because it's so funny.
Yeah.
At the time when I first saw it, I was laughing what I thought with her.
Yes.
Because it seems like she's so in on the joke and she has that comedic timing and the voices and the like mannerisms and whatever that like voice she's doing throughout. Like I was still laughing. But yeah, I had the same experience, Lucia. Doing a rewatch, I'm like, oh, now I kind of feel like I'm laughing at her, but I want to be like celebrating her because this is such a good movie. And I just like, I'm obsessed with her.
I just want to tell her that. Like I just want her, and I'm sure she hears it all the time and she just hates this movie. And I'm like, this is gold. This is one of the most quotable movies too, I think. Like, I just think she's so good at it. I think it works.
I think it works too. Now, Lucy, when you do quote it as you watch, do you do the Amanda Bynes voice?
Yes.
Can we hear it?
My favorite's Gouda. And when she counts to five and she's like, one, it's not a stupid soccer issue and you're a jerk. Oh, look at that. And slaps him. Like, she just like, it's the voices. It's the jokes. I don't think people wrote all of this for her. I think she helped produce it by bringing Channing in. I think she gave it the personality. Like, I'm struggling with the casting part that you're going to ask me in a little bit because I don't think we have another next generation Amanda Bynes.
I think it's you, quite frankly, after that little audition you just gave us.
But now I'm 30. So again, I know we don't care about ages.
Well, that
but
would take care of any impending lawsuits for the flashing, you know?
She was of age. I did the math and I was like, how old is she flashing? Because he was older.
Yeah.
But he looked, I thought they looked, I mean, I didn't know anybody like that in my high school, but I felt like I never questioned Duke Orsino's age.
It was no Dear Evan Hansen.
Don't. Please.
I know.
No. Speaking of bad wigs. Now, wait, before we move on, this was quite the scheme that she came up with here. So then it made me think, like, did I ever do anything scheme-worthy like that? And yes, I did. So I'll tell you a quick story. Chelsea, I don't know if I've ever told you about the time I broke up an engagement in college.
Nope, you sure haven't.
Okay, so I was in drama club in college, as everyone is well aware, and we were coming up with fundraiser ideas, and this girl, whose fiance was also in the drama club, this girl came up with a fundraiser idea that she would dress like Little Bo Peep, and then everyone else would dress as sheep and hide in different classrooms. So if she barged in your classroom as you were taking a math test, whatever, dressed as Little Bo Peep, and she was like, "Where's my sheep?" If there was one in your class, everyone in the class had to pay. I don't know why people would do it. I don't know, like, what kind of idea this was.
I think that's the ultimate scheme. We haven't even gotten to the impending breakup. Follow-up question. Were people, like, in the classroom hiding, so everybody's taking a math test and there's just a sheep like under the teacher's desk and has been there hiding?
I don't know. This was a terrible idea. I was on the executive board of this drama club and I was like, no, we're going to be taken seriously. So when she said that, I knew that I needed to end her. So then I invited her fiance over to my house to watch Cruel Intentions. Sensible. And then I blew him.
Sounds like she ended up being the sheep.
I kind of didn't think it was gonna go that way, like how you broke this up. And then when you said Cruel Intentions and you invited him over, I was like, oh, we're gonna expose this fiance.
We went there. So then I did that. And then I texted him a few days later and I was like, hey, I thought about what happened. I don't think we should tell anyone. And then she messaged me from his phone and said, hi, I thought something happened, so I stole his phone. So then the next few weeks were very awkward for everyone involved. She called the police on my 20th birthday and told them that she knew there was underage drinking there. Like, things took a turn for the worst.
How did you just say police and sirens are just like coming?
No, I think that she's about to barge in and say, where are my sheep? And there's been a sheep hiding under your desk for 20 years waiting for this.
So that's it.
I cannot remember how we got to
the biggest scheme I ever did.
Oh, okay.
Donnie really took some liberties with that transition so that he could tell this. I am horrified and yet once again reminded that I will never cross you.
No.
Never.
As Nicole Richie said in season one of The Simple Life, rule number one, don't fuck with me.
Certainly don't pitch any convoluted charity schemes. My God, she was just trying to raise some money for the drama department. Let's move on, I guess. So we do have to discuss the chaos that is this boys' dormitory. There are people playing sports in the hall. They are blasting music. It is pure insanity. But she does have a shirtless Channing Tatum as a roommate, which is worth the price of admission, in my humble opinion. But this leads me to a question. I would like to hear your worst roommate story, if you have one. I lived in the Outer Banks between my sophomore and junior year of college, and I lived in like a shack, and I'm not using that in a hyperbolic type of way. There was no air conditioning, barely had electricity, barely had running water, but I was like literally just like a 30-second walk from the ocean. So it was like a little tiny commune full of drunk college kids, and it was so much fun. But I had a roommate. I lived in this house, and then it was in one room. It was me and my two girlfriends, and we had slid the bed from the other bedroom into this master bedroom with the three of us, like bed to bed to bed, because originally I was supposed to share a room with this guy named Scooter. Now, I am changing this name, Donnie. Take notes. Okay. This man was always shirtless, and he had an iguana, a pet iguana that's name was Ralph. This name has not been changed. His iguana's real name was Ralph. Okay. He used to take Ralph out for walks on the beach because he said that he needed to be in his natural habitat. I don't think there's any truth to this. This iguana was not on a leash. He would frequently escape his cage and just be like wandering around our hot as hell house. But one of the like weirdest things that he would do is he would pretend to get drunk. So we would all be like across the street at the party house of this little compound, and he would wait, and he would keep like a handle of Jack Daniels in our freezer that had like one sip left. And he would like come once the party had been in full swing and like come over shirtless as always with the handle and be like, oh my God, I drank this whole handle and I'm so drunk, and act drunk. But like the three of us who lived with him were like, no, that's the same bottle from every weekend, Scooter. Like, what's happening? We all just like fucking hated his guts. And it all culminated when we were partaking in perhaps the devil's lettuce over at the party house one day, just all like hanging out. And I am like going off about Scooter. I'm talking about how much I hate him, how annoying he is, how he pretends to be drunk. And I look directly to my left and he is sitting next to me. And there's nothing I can do at that point. So I just said, oh, wow, you're right there. And everybody laughed and we moved on. Now, later, Scooter did shoot and kill someone, so that does not have a happy ending.
You almost acted like you were going to leave that fact out. Like, that was just like, now I did just remember.
Yeah, I just felt like I needed to wrap up that story. Yeah, so that was hands down my worst roommate of all time, for many reasons.
Yeah, because you survived.
Wow. I think you win. My freshman year of college, I lived with a football player. He really tried to, like, torment me and really made me miserable. I wanted to transfer, whatever. We're not going to get into that. This is a comedy podcast.
I just told a tale about murder and an iguana, but okay. We're like, thanks, Lucy, for coming on. Now let's unpack some of our deepest traumas.
Donnie's, like, exposed some girl who's into sheep, and you've got a murderer in your past, like... I lived in a sorority. Might be hell for many, many people, but I was
jealous of you. I always wanted a teen movie about me where I dressed up as a girl and joined a sorority.
Well, it can still happen. So Vi is having trouble fitting in, which is probably not helped by her overall stench since she is not able to take a shower. But she does eventually win the guys over by showing them that she can, in fact, fit in. And she can also be a womanizing, sexist douchebag. I just have to say, the early aughts were a wild time for internalized misogyny, because after slapping some girls in the ass and breaking up publicly with her brother's girlfriend, the guys accept her as one of their own. Good times, good times.
I mean, I have to say, though, like, I feel like that's how they kind of save the scene, is the bitchy girl who's just so mean to the one guy, like, hey, pretty lady.
And you sound like her. If I close my eyes,
yeah. I see you for what you truly are, which is ugly. We're done. Like, and again, though, we're in a local, it feels like pizza joint that everyone hits up in this town. And again, we have never crossed paths.
I had never thought about how there is truly no center part of this Venn diagram in this very small town where people know each other. And this all kind of comes to a head at this carnival, which I have to say, there's something about this like classic trope of having to be in two places at once that gives me terrible anxiety. But we have to talk about this kissing booth.
That jawline? Is that what we're going to talk about? Because Channing Tatum's jawline in that scene. And then they go at it. And then it's a lot of tongue. They do that, though, at every time they've kissed. It seems like, I don't know if, again, it's his jaw and he just has a lot of tongue in there. Like, it just seems like he's always coming in hot.
Yeah, very giraffe-like.
But also the entire, like, premise of the kissing booth in a COVID world is just an absolute nightmare. Not to mention, once again, they are high school students. She trades out with the girl before her and she says, beware of the old guy chewing gum. It's not gum. And I was like, what is it then? And why are old men being allowed to kiss underage high school girls apparently repeatedly, because we know about the not gum situation?
Wow, that's so... Once you started saying it, I was like, she's going to bring up the old man. And I've never thought again, even though I said, how are they in high school? I just didn't question that she's going to kiss the 10-year-old boy next, who is very aggressive. I'd like to know where he's at in life right now. Back of the line, butt ball. It's like so intense. So just intense for this kiss. And how can Duke not flirt?
I think that that is actually one of the most believable plot lines, because that is pretty people privilege right there, that you've never had to develop the ability to hold a conversation because you look like Channing Tatum. You know what I mean? Like, you've never had to like string together a sentence because people see you and they're like, ah, yes, please stick your muscular tongue down my throat. Thank you.
But it just makes me confused, I guess, because the casting of this, like when we get to that part, it makes it much easier to cast a Channing Tatum Duke Orsino because it's a very flat character next to Amanda Bynes, who we are like, this girl's funny. She's athletic. She's clever. She's snarky. She likes cheese. Like, there's a lot of depth there. I don't know why when she starts like having feelings for Duke outside of the kiss, why? What has he said to her that is like so profound?
I love that, like, the profound thing that he told her that he was like a sensitive guy, was that he would like to have deep conversations with someone. That's the deep conversation, is his intention to one day have a deep conversation.
Which, again, it's high school, but like Amanda Bynes was just so up here.
Yeah. And that is not physically the same, but like, to loop it back to the beginning of this episode really quick. So many sitcoms are like a hot wife with like so much personality, and then like Kevin James or like or whoever.
Famously Donnie's personality twin, Kevin James.
Yeah, so like, I know Kevin James and Channing Tatum are not the same physically, but at the end of the day, they're both like schlubs, like in this movie, of course, not Magic Mike. So yeah, I think that's just, I don't know if that's a trope, I don't know if that's real life. But
another button and another through line of this podcast is we have already dealt with Chad Michael Murray not recognizing Hilary Duff because of the lace mask. And now we have Duke, who does not recognize Vi when it is literally her face. Like, she does not have a mask on. She has just taken off the bob. And he's like, wait, do I know you from somewhere? I'm like, you have been sleeping next to this person for 2 weeks, Duke. Get it together, man.
And that's the difference. In Cinderella's story, at least Chad Michael Murray, like, didn't pay attention to this waitress. Like, he was very clearly only a good person with her on the phone. And, like, when he was with his friends, he didn't care what this waitress looked like. It could have been a robot. But this, Channing Tatum, like, lived with this boy. It is... it's crazy for him not to know that it's her.
It's that voice change that totally throws the whole thing off.
And the sideburns.
And maybe the smell. Like, Viola doesn't smell. He's like, ooh.
You showered. Well, let's talk about the stalking situation in this movie. So we have two people who are hell-bent on figuring out this mystery. We have the ex-girlfriend of the real Sebastian, and then we have... the answer to Scooter and his iguana, we have the other stalker and his tarantula.
This kid should be on a watch list.
He's concerning. He's somebody that might break up an engagement over Bo Peep. You know?
No, I think he's the murderer in your shit. Like, he's going to kill Olivia even when she gets with the real Sebastian.
True, yeah. But I will say, and maybe it's just because Chelsea compared me to him, I will say, like, he and Monique are the smartest ones in this film.
I just can't get over when he sings, like, in the classroom, I see you through your window. Red flags. He's just waving them.
He's telling
people.
On himself, literally.
Yes, yeah. Again, no parents watching them. The principal is the only parental guidance we've seen. Mm-hmm. And he's not worried about Malcolm stalking Olivia. Olivia's not safe.
So the real Sebastian returns early and gets his face painted. No one notices that they have switched back. I guess they are so identical, it's just hard to tell. And the principal announces to the entire school that Sebastian is a girl. So naturally, Sebastian needs to prove his manhood by pulling down his pants and flashing his little Sebastian, shout out to my Parks and Rec people out there, to the entire crowd. Disturbing. Like, certainly there could be other ways of proving this.
On school property.
Yeah.
And no one's arrested? This is flashing. Right. This is public exposure. Their parents are rooting them on. They're like, there's our kids. Like, and then just go play the soccer game. Like, go back. Please finish that.
Yeah. And I do have to say, I know earlier I had an issue with her playing soccer with her hair down, but at this point we have bigger fish to fry because I'm concerned that this woman has been playing a sport without a sports bra this whole time. And like, if that has happened, she can't be helped. It's gone too far. There's no coming back from this. Like,
no.
That's painful.
You're right. I'm trying to think, like, if she, like, you can see a bra, but you
cannot. You cannot, because it was the first thing I thought of. And I knew I should have been fixated on how horrifying it is that a presumably, like, 17-year-old girl is just flashing grown adults and the entire student body of a school she does not go to. But I was just focused on the fact. I was like, this bitch isn't wearing a bra.
The whole back half, again, like, it just gets very secondhand embarrassment. Her impassioned speeches just don't have the Amanda flair, I feel like. It's very like, coach, put me in. Like, she's just trying to be so intense. And she's like, Duke, I'm in love with you. Like, and it's just like, where is all this coming from? Just play this shitty game.
And I also, again, famously the sporty twin, but even I have to recognize there could have been about 10 minutes less of actual soccer footage. Donnie, are you about to say you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it didn't bother me, because I famously tell my husband after every single superhero movie, like, that could have been two fights less. But this, the soccer footage didn't bother me.
I thought the soccer footage was, especially when they got to the game, they were hot. Like, when they came out in their face paint and the other team gets there, even though Justin, like, sucks, his voice drops to a certain octave when they call heads or tails. He's like, I don't even think I can go that low. He says heads in such a deep voice that it's chilling. And Channing has painted his jawline in such a way that even accentuates it more. Like, and then there's Viola, like, in the stands, like, trying to get someone's attention. No one sees her pull the brother who has just exposed his niblets, like, to the crowd. That's who you'd be watching the whole time. Like, that,
wait,
I don't
Lucy,
know.
While you're talking about Justin, can you, because I'm sure Chelsea doesn't know, can you talk about the Step Up connection?
Yes. So I believe this actor deserves more credit in his repertoire. And I don't think it's much more depth than this. But Channing obviously was discovered, as Donnie pointed out, from a Mountain Dew commercial and got into this movie. He then goes on pretty quickly after this to be in the first Step Up, which, Chelsea, I don't know if you've seen that.
Add it to the list.
Add it to the list.
Ooh, okay.
Because also, that is one of those movies that is just so good because the actors actually fall in love, and that breakup really just, like, haunts you. Yeah. So anyway, they do Step Up. Step Up 2, an underrated film, features Justin as the main guy who can also dance. And he was really hot in it. Like, I think doesn't put Channing to shame because it's Step Up or Step Up 2. But if you watch Step Up 1, you're going to have to watch Step Up 2. Because they have some great chemistry there as well. And then he goes on to do absolutely nothing. But wow, the Step Up connection to this movie, I don't know if any writer or producer or agent was like, oh, we're going to make a Step Up franchise. Just take these two guys and, like, they need career boosts. But, like, there's something there that somehow this all got connected.
Yeah, and I'm on IMDb right now. I'm not looking further than this, but I think this is curious. They were both in Coach Carter as well, before even She's the Man. So, like, there, I do think there's a through line.
They definitely share an agent or something there.
Something. Yeah. But Channing had more.
I have to say, again, he was delightful. Like, I believed his character of being this, like, hot idiot who didn't know how to talk to girls.
And I believe the douchey ex-boyfriend. Like, yeah. I thought everybody played their roles well.
100%.
I just thought we have some questionable things happening that, like, we just don't address. Mm-hmm. Stalkers and parents absent and flashing. Like, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense, but everyone did a good job.
Everybody I will say, now, I didn't read the original, but I do think because it is coming from Shakespeare, I do wonder if, like, the only way to make it work as a remake was to, like, really make it not work. Like, I wonder if Shakespeare's version, I'm sure it takes place with a war or whatever. I wonder if it, like, makes complete sense. You don't question anything. But then when you have to set it in a high school in the soccer world, you're like, eh. Doesn't really work, so let's just throw it and hope nobody notices.
Well, I think it's interesting because the writers, you said, also did 10 Things I Hate About You, which first, and that's based on
Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah, like, a lot of things are also based on, which is not Shakespeare, I don't think, Pygmalion, like My Fair Lady and stuff, where they, like, you know, revamp the woman, Pretty Woman. Like, so I feel like the dipping into much more serious and fancy literature is common. It's almost like now how producers are just like remaking movies. Right. At least they went back to like plays and they're like, no yeah. one's going to get this, but it's going to sound fancy. Like the connection is not obvious as it would be for like, we're going to remake West Side Story again.
Right. Like, right.
Yeah. And that was such a moment in the aughts of being like, no, but it's fancy. Shakespeare.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I honestly, the writing, I think, reflects it. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're having these rom-com, these teen movies anymore. Like, we've got Netflix trying with another kissing booth, but that wasn't it.
I'll say it. The last good one was Easy A, and that was based on classics as well.
With Amanda.
Oh, my God, yes.
I will say I liked To All the Boys I Loved Before. That was a cute one. But it wasn't, it's not as, like, clever writing. Like, I feel like Easy A is, like, Emma Stone shines. But I'm fine with, like, going straight to the streamers now. I just think people need to be writing them.
And that's where you come in.
It's the dream, guys. Ask,
believe, receive, and so it is.
Yeah.
So before we do let you go, because we have fully held you captive, you've talked about how hard it's going to be to recast Amanda Bynes, and I completely agree. I think she is the only one of her kind. But if you had to recast her, who would we cast in a modern-day remake of this movie?
I thought about it a lot. I think I took some notes. The guys were, like, much easier to cast. Like, who's a hot guy right now? Because also the age thing, like, at least Amanda Bynes was, like, 19. Mm-hmm. And Channing was 24 or something. I think we want to stay below 25. Try and give them some essence of school. Maybe move this to college, though. Could be okay.
That could fix some things, certainly.
That could fix a few things for us. But I feel like my only person was Florence Pugh. Like, I thought, because she's funny. She was in, and if you've been watching the Marvel Universe, like, she was in Scarlet Witch, and she was really funny Black in Widow, that. Black Widow, sorry, he's yelling from the other side.
Another guest appearance.
Yeah.
Or there's going to have to be, which I don't want to pull TikTok stars, the Addison Rae of it all has scarred me, but I feel like there's got to be someone who's like really quick on TikTok that I just don't know of that's like younger.
You know who? Average fashion blogger.
She would so be funny. Great. She'd be great. Yes. Oh my gosh, that's a great one. She could do this justice. Yes. Oh my gosh, that is exactly who it should be. Guy-wise, I feel like you can take, I know we already cast Noah Centineo in Cinderella's Story, but I think he could just keep going, just fill some slots for us.
I cast him as Justin.
I would love that. There's also the guy, you talked about Outer Banks in a totally different way, but if you've watched the show, there's some good guys from that cast. Not the main guy who might have his lips done, but like there's some cute 20-somethings that I feel like they don't have to have a ton of depth. And they could give us more humor, but like the girl is the hardest part. And I think the principal is really funny. Like we could do a Stanley Tucci, like how he does Easy A.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
I don't know. That's it just, I don't know if it can be done. I just don't know if it can be done.
I don't think so, but I tried and I made it Kiki Palmer.
Didn't you say her before?
What world do you live in that actresses only do one job?
Okay.
Oh my God. No, but Kiki Palmer has a YouTube show currently where she plays a family, a full family, every single member. So I think that's just her audition video for this. But then as Duke, I casted Mason Gooding, who is Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son. You may know him from Love, Victor, Booksmart, The New Scream. He's so hot. There are no nudes of him online. I checked today, but...
He's hot.
He's so hot.
So true to form, I kind of did this assignment.
Okay, I
started and then I got distracted, but I didn't focus. I was the same way as you, Lucy. I was like, nobody is going to be able to actually like carry this role. So I focused on who would actually be believable to like put a bob on somebody and believe that they are their sibling. So I said Willow and Jaden Smith.
That
would be believable for me that they could play each other or that Willow could play Jaden.
That was a good route to go.
Yeah, that's
fine. I don't think either of them have the acting chops for this,
but then we could have a cameo from the parents. They could play the parents. We could have Will and Jada.
I feel like Will, he's now getting his Golden Globe noms. Not that that's a great thing, but like Will's on to King Richard and like waiting for the Oscars. I just think people don't give the rom-coms the respect. Mm-hmm. Again, Amanda would have built off this and she'd be accepting an Oscar about something. People would be like, the star of She's the Man. Like, it's high on her IMDb.
And then this would be like a cult classic in a way that it should deserve to be one. Because then people would be coming back to her original things and being like, oh my God, but wait, this movie was so brilliant. And at the time it wasn't appreciated. But so we just got to get to that. Well, pick your poison. Either the alternate universe where she's suffering silently like Donnie wants.
And we just visit for one day, or we fix it.
Or we fix it and she's successful and wildly happy. But I feel the same way as you, Lucy, of like, I just want her to be happy and healthy and good. And I'm always, always, always rooting for a comeback.
She could write. Like, I just think she could write. She could produce. She saw Channing's potential. She obviously added her one-liners in here, despite the fact that they don't admit that. Like, that is her, like, that brings this to life.
Yeah.
She wrote her own show. Right. She had a better than SNL. Like, she's doing better than those writers. Dancing Lobsters? Come on. Right. Judge Judy wishes.
So, one more thing before we go. We like to ask, what aged well and what aged like blockbuster about this film? For me, the blockbuster is The Kissing Booth. That does not hold up in a pandemic type of universe. It didn't really hold up back then, but now just the germs just adds a whole other layer of ick.
Yeah, I'm problematic and I'm a cis white male, so I could be wrong. But I think overall it does age pretty well. And even like the individual misogynistic jokes and like lines, I do think they're heavy, but they are kind of necessary for what the overall message is going to be.
Well, it's also said with like a wink and a nod. And I think that that again is like the magic of Amanda Bynes is like, you know, that she knows it's ridiculous. So then as the viewer, as like a woman watching, it's like, we're laughing at these terrible guys. We're not like thinking that they're great. We're being like, wow, what dumbasses. Boys are so stupid.
I would say that like in any other movie, that's probably what jumps out. But I think you're right, Chelsea, that like she does it in a way that's even the scene where she's like trying to be new school, new babe pool, like she's trying to act like this huge tool. And like she's poking fun at the guys who do this and the fact that this made her cool.
Yeah.
Right. She's in on it. So I feel like that ages way better than most movies. I feel like because I watched it as a youth, I didn't think much of it, but there is just the nudity of the young high school student is concerning, and the stalking. Now, do we need that to carry on a rom-com? Maybe. Maybe we did. And so, like, does it age? It aged fine, but there's not much diversity in the cast, I will say. But I feel like we've already recast for the reboot, and we're showing that it's much more so. But that would be the only thing. And we maybe Eunice. They're really mean to Eunice. There's a level of bullying that I think's happening there.
That's not addressed at all. The principal is worried about how Sebastian is perhaps balding under his wig and just overlooking the stalking and bullying of the student body.
Well, also I will say, maybe it's because you know the kind of person I used to be and maybe am. I didn't really notice that they were bullying Eunice.
Well, because Eunice is a little creepy. So like we do need to call out some of her tendencies.
Right.
Like, it's not wrong that they're like, Eunice is a little weird. There's something that's like, there's a joke about the girl in headgear. Like they're really poking fun at that, but she also needs help with Malcolm.
Yeah. And probably shouldn't be like sitting bedside watching people sleep. You know, there's some social skills that need to be developed there.
I made Eunice breakfast, darling.
I'm just changing my answer. My recast is you, Lucy, playing all of the parts because you put on a one-woman production and it was amazing.
It's one of those movies that if you watch late, I can see like how people watch these movies and they're like, why was this big? Like, why would you recommend this? But like, it is so quotable. And my Big Fat Greek Wedding, like the most quotable early aughts movies.
So good.
Well, this was so much fun. Before you go, before we let you free and set you on your way, tell everybody where they can find you, follow you, all the things.
Just really one place, Lucy on the Ground on Instagram. That's it. I had to think about my email is like Lucy on the Ground with rocks, but Instagram was like, that is a mouthful. Like, so it is just Lucy on the Ground on Instagram. And that's it. And that's where I'll be probably talking about these rom-coms I could talk about this all day. That's why you guys are like, okay, we're going to cut it off. I'm like, are you sure? Have we hit everything?
Well, I'm glad that you're still wanting to talk, because I saw the fear in your eyes after me and Donnie's back-to-back stories. I saw you being like, why am I here right now? So I'm glad that you wanted to talk about the films more.
I found them fascinating, and those are the scripts we need next. Like, there are screenplays hidden in your lives that we do need to expose.
So what you're saying is, when you become the next Nancy Myers, we'll be consulted for perhaps some life stories and some royalties. I love that.
Yeah, no, the sheep and the lizard.
That's a children's book, yeah.
There's a lot there that I would like to analyze much further another time. That's a whole other podcast.
That is a whole other podcast. Yeah, that'll be our next podcast called I Have Follow-Up Questions, where you just interview us.
Wait, you need to cut that part out, because it's a great idea. Don't let people steal that from you.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you later.
Love you like a sister. Bye.
Thank you for listening to I Am the Cute One, a podcast from The Dip.
If you liked what you heard, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and subscribe to our show. You can follow me at Donnie Hadfield Smith on Instagram and listen to Know That, a Real Housewives podcast.
And if you want more of my personal brand of chaos, check me out on Instagram at Ono Bravo, or subscribe to my Patreon for bonus content and more, patreon.com/OnoBravo.
Be sure to check out The Dip's other podcasts, including Hot Off the Mess with Samantha Bush, Morgan's Pop Talks, and The Slut Pig Podcast.
And head to thedip.com, that's dip with 2 P's, to read news and commentary about some of your favorite shows. You can use the code CUTEONE for 50% off.
Talk to you later. Love you like a sister.